Welcome to The Other Coast, a podcast detailing the Malifaux meta in Los Angeles. My name is Jeff, and with me here is a SoCal player, Colgan, and an East Coast player, Jim.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Hey, so I just realized whenever I introduce Colgan, I always say SoCal, and then when I introduce Jim, I say East Coast, so I'm much more specific with Colgan's location, even though I know where Jim is located. Well, at least I know the state where he's located.
And but do they have like a fancy name? Like SoCal?
Yeah, what is the name of your region, Jim?
If we want to go by U.S. FOTOR regions, we can call it capital area, capital city area. You can call it the Delmarva area if you want to get regional.
The Delmarva area? You're in Baltimore, right?
Yeah, so Delaware, Maryland, Virginia. You take the first bits for each of those states, and it's Delmarva.
Oh, when my dad's family first came here from China, they lived in Maryland for a while. Mm-hmm. But I've never been there. For, you know, decent things.
Of all the states in the Union, it is one of them.
Well, so I guess from now on, I will try to introduce you with more specificity and do proper respect to the Delmarva region. Shout out to all of our listeners in that area, I guess, which is probably just Jim.
No, there's a good number of folks out here.
Oh, well, then hopefully they will appreciate this effort that I am making to be more sensitive to their various
Malifaux region. The next question would be, is Delmarva more specific than SoCal at this point? Because now you're just going the other direction.
Well, no, I combined the names of three states. I mean, even eastern states are still going to be larger than, you know, Los Angeles. At least in terms of area,
I'm
not
pretty
population.
Sure. I'm pretty sure Los Angeles, okay, I'm going to say this, I'm wrong, but I think Los Angeles is bigger than the entire state of Delaware. Like, it is not a big state.
You can just start doing, you know, like in Rhode Island, they don't even draw the borders. They just have an arrow pointed like some region of the eastern mm-hmm. coast.
Whenever you're talking to someone, they just kind of wave their hand in the air. It's like over there.
Yeah, so I don't actually know that much about geography, so I'm going to move on from this topic rather than continually display my ignorance.
To the Other Coast, a civics podcast.
That's right, or a geography one anyways. All right, so today is the most wretched time of the year. This is our Festivus episode. This is our third one, believe it or not. We have somehow managed to keep going for that long. And it is a yearly tradition that kicks off with the airing of grievances. And this is when we vent, because holding things in, which is sort of our normal mode of operation on the Other Coast, is psychologically unhealthy. So this is our chance to, I don't know, maybe release some well-considered and minor quibbles with Malifaux and Weird. Ordinarily, I would start off, but let's shake things up this year and begin at 11. Colgan, do you have any grievances this year?
Now I feel like I just need to steal your The Other Side rant.
Well, you can do that because I gave you the opening, but you also had the one we talked in the original pre-show.
I mean, I guess it goes hand in hand, though. It's like the model float. I guess I'll dip into the other side a little bit.
I'll just pick one and go. This is the area of grievances, not like the sorting of grievances.
Yeah, so the model float issue, I think, it's making it harder and harder to help people get in the game at this point, I think. When third edition started and after I had kind of got my bearings and like settled more or less on like a faction and learn to play the game. Like when new people would come in and ask about the game, I was like able to give them a quick spiel and I could talk like semi-competently about most of the masters in the game. And then now, like when people come in and they're asking for suggestions or play styles and things like that, I feel like my answers are so unhelpful because with all the titles and everything, I'm just like, you know, well, just pick someone and, you know, you can play the other title if you don't like their play style. And it's so hard, I think, to give any kind of like solid suggestions at this point outside of like the masters I actually play, which is like maybe like four or five. And even of those, I'm not necessarily familiar with their title versions. I know one of our players, like he had played Rasputina, but it's not quite clicking with him. and he was looking for other masters, and I was like trying to think of recommendations. I'm like, well, I guess there's Master Tina Title. I feel like it's kind of that thing where I forget what it's called, but there's some psychological thing where, you know, when people have like too much choice, it actually results in like less overall happiness. It's kind of like decision paralysis at that point, right? Explorer Society came out and that was like, okay, it's like, this might be kind of the capstone. We have like 8 factions. McCabe and Bass finally have like units in their other faction. And then all the titles dropped. And then now we have the 7 new masters on 7 new keywords, right? 7?
6.
6?
It's 6 new keywords for 8 factions.
Okay. So now we have the 6 new keywords. And I feel like reading through a lot of them, they seem to also ramp up the complexity of the game a lot, to the point where it feels like if you're playing against one of the newest keywords in your first game, like I think it's just going to be just a very difficult and bewildering experience. Like the the new character, like the Tiri, like the nomad, who has like all of these abilities on her cards that she can turn on or off on her turn for everyone else in her keyword, where they'll do completely different things. So it's like, I guess as like a new player going into that, it's like, okay, this guy is a tank. Oh, but now he's a beater. And it's like, okay, you just have to remember that they can switch on a dime and, you know, their entire behavior changes. And it feels like at this point, like I don't run a store, but it seems like I don't even know what you would stock for Malifaux at this point.
Right.
Trying to stock like the core boxes for every single master will eat up your entire wall. And then after that, you still need to like fill out their keywords and everything. You know, even within our meta, it's not like I don't think we even have like half the masters represented.
No, I don't think we do. And actually, like Mike, the store owner, stocks way more Malifaux than I think you would find in like a random game store. And partially, no doubt, that's to support us, which, you know, we very much appreciate. But even before we had an active meta, you know, Mike really makes an effort to stock independent. Well, Weird isn't, I don't think you can really call Weird independent at this point, but smaller press, i.e. not GW type games, right? And so I think it does kind of put retailers, you know, like Mike, into sort of a tough spot. Do you try to cover as many complete keywords as possible? Do you try to stock as many masters as possible? If you're a store owner, you probably just through kind of osmosis exposure understand a little bit about Malifaux. But if you don't play the game, how are you supposed to decide what makes sense to stock? You might not even understand the keyword system. You know, even if you do understand that, if you don't really have your thumb on the pulse of the game, how do you know what versatiles to stock? How do you know, you know, what's in, what's out? And so I really do sympathize from a retailer standpoint, which these brick and mortar retailers, they are an absolute critical hub for tabletop games. For some people, they're the only place where they can really play these games. You know, first of all, they're in a niche industry, which is already difficult. And then they have to compete against, you know, online retailers. They don't have their overhead. And even, you know, some of the miniature market in back east, I forget where it is, like Ohio or something like that, right? I mean, that is a brick and mortar store, but it's one with just a massive online presence too. And when you have to compete against people who are selling everything at 30% off, it's hard enough to do even when you know what to stock. And it's not like this is a consignment business. He buys this stuff hoping that it's right. And I just think that, not specifically Weird, but the industry as a whole, if they don't support these brick and mortar retailers, I think, you know, ultimately they're the ones who are going to suffer when these stores disappear. Gamers are also going to suffer, but they're still going to be able to get product elsewhere. But these stores are going to find, you know, they're going to have much fewer players if these places don't exist. So I'm quite sympathetic to kind of like the retailer side of that complaint.
Colgan, just to touch base on something you said earlier, what you were describing is called choice overload bias, according to Google. It describes how, and this is coming from thedecisionlab.com, don't know if they're official or anything, but choice overload describes how when given more options to choose from, people tend to have a harder time deciding are less satisfied with their choice and are more likely to experience regret. Does that sound like what you were talking about?
Yeah, that's more or less what I remember. And I think especially when starting a new game, right, you know, because you're investing so much time and money into it, you want to make sure you're picking up something that you're actually going to enjoy and play for a while. And if there's like, what, in Malifaux, there's like 60, 63 masters, maybe more, maybe less. I don't know exactly with the dual faction stuff.
But it's like, something, yeah.
Yeah, like how do you know which master fits your playstyle? And I feel like at the start of third edition, I could at least help guide people to, you know, narrow it down to maybe like 5 or 6 masters. Mm-hmm. And like at this point, like I don't think I'm really much of a help. It's just like, you know, pick something that looks cool. It'll probably work out. It's just really hard because there's so many masters, there's so many models, there's so many titles, and there's just so much stuff to learn even as like a casual player. Because sure, even though, you know, you like you learn your own keyword, now there's so many possible things to go up against. And mm-hmm. I think it's just it makes it really tough, I think.
Yeah, I experienced Chob, which is what I'm gonna call it from now on. At like pretty much every time I go to a restaurant, I have like several things that I've narrowed down to what I want, and I can't really decide one from the other. And then I just make a panic decision when I feel like my server's disapproval, which often ends up being none of the things that I had been previously considering. Mm-hmm. The thing about this is that, you know, you might think, oh, well, if I like 5 things, any of the 5 I pick is fine. But the reality is, nobody knows exactly what it is that's going to turn someone off of an experience or maybe even stop them from trying it in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. And when someone expounds on their thought process, the first reaction might be, you know, that I might have is like, well, that sounds really stupid. But people do, you know, people are not rational actors, even though various social sciences are constructed as though we are. When you're trying to pitch something like a game, you know, a pastime, and there's a lot of other competition for people's options and people's time, any obstacle that makes it more difficult to get into is just another thing you have to overcome. And you don't know which one of these obstacles will ultimately prove to be the final stumbling block. And we've talked about in the past, like kind of how we think it's difficult for players to know how to get into Malifaux in terms of like which products they should start with. But the range of choices does not help. And it's kind of odd to say that because you might think, oh, wow, there's like all these different masters and they have the different play styles. It's like all these really cool options. Yeah, but if you are not presenting them in a way that is easily digestible, then it doesn't help. And for me, you know, one aspect of this that of like this product presentation that bothers me is the way the title boxes have been presented, right? So it's like 2 masters that don't necessarily have any previous connection to each other. And then unless it's a minion with multiple copies, you know, you get like 1 enforcer. And even if it's a minion with multiple copies, it's not like you get enough copies for both players. So, for both masters to have simultaneously. So unless you're someone who really wants both of those, splitting that box with another person is really awkward. And I think, you know, just anecdotally at our store, these boxes would have been a lot more convenient if, say, like the Perdita and Ophelia box came with 2 slides. And then you really could be like, well, you know what? I will, you know, I play Ophelia. I know someone who plays Perdita. We're going to split this box. And right now, that's kind of an awkward operation. One of you has to either not want Sly or like pay more or whatever. And I just, you know, in my mind, it's like, who is the customer? Like when Weird's doing these packaging decisions and these content decisions, do they really think that everyone plays everything or that there's, you know, not going to be any issue with people not wanting, you know, the extra model that comes in these title boxes? So I think that it's Weird could do some of these things to help out its player base that currently, you know, not really being done very well. Like the other side starter, right? That's how you get guild mages. And guild mages are fantastic. So what are you going to do? Do you, I don't know how much it is because I bought mine a long time ago, so I don't remember anymore. But what is it, like $100 or something? Are you going to pay $100 for a guild mage? Like if you don't play Sonya or Kirai, you don't care about the masters. You know, I am really on board with this grievance of Kulgan's.
Thank you.
Do you have another one?
I mean, I guess it's also, now that you're talking about the other side starter set, it's just how they're kind of doing this half-ass relaunch of the other side. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying this, but like the other side is the best game I will never recommend to anyone. Because mm-hmm. like I don't know what's going to happen, right? Like they have those four starter army, like the four armies, they released like I guess all the initial wave of models. And then there was just like radio silence from Weird for like over a year or something. Cause I remember going to the shop, seeing the other side stuff and basically being told that it was a dead game. And I'm not and I can't really confidently say that's changed, even though, you know, they released a new The Other Side starter. They released this app and, you know, they're teasing the new faction. But even at this point, like, I don't know where you would start if you wanted to get into The Other Side. Like, it's really, oh, go to eBay and find out people trying to offload The Other Side stuff because no one plays it.
Yeah.
I remember we were talking about it the other day at the store, and then one of the people messaged me. He's like, oh, hey, so, like, what should I do if I want to get started in The Other Side? I'm like, oh, no. It's a fun game, but I can't hold the responsibility of this. I mean, yeah, they have the starter for the guild and, what, the Court of Two, but they're not really full armies. Like, you could play a 25-point game, but the standard game should be 50 points, and I don't think there's even two commanders.
Well, yeah, so it's the other way around, right? You could play a one commander game, but you can't play a two commander game.
And two commander games are like the standard game size or the suggested game size. Like, single commander games are kind of like your demo game. And then even if you did expand it, like, if they released another commander, you have like no unit variety. You have no Titan. Like, you just don't have any of these cool toys that exist in factions that you can no longer get your hands on, like, first party, I don't think.
Yeah, I have definite thoughts on this. But before I, you know, launch into one of those arias, Jim, what's the other side like in your area? The Delmarva area.
What's what like?
The other side.
What's that?
You can Google it.
So my shop does have a copy of each of the army boxes for the other side. I saw them in the store when I went there last week, and I thought about picking one up because, you know, I finally saw them in the wild. I don't know anyone else in my group who still has theirs or has expressed interest to play. I admittedly still haven't read through the rulebook for it. I personally don't feel a strong draw at this time to learn an entire new game, even if it's very similar to Foe. Not to rehash the bloat issue for Malifaux, but I don't really have the brain space or time right now to devote to another game with all the rules and complications that could be played. So I really am not commenting here because I really don't have an opinion right now.
Which, I mean, that in itself is kind of problematic, right? Because you are a fairly committed Malifaux player. You know, in sort of the Venn diagram of customer overlap that they must have been looking at when they decided to go army scale, you are a prime customer. And the failure to hook you really speaks to, you know, the other side's struggles.
On that note, I think one of the other issues with all the Malifaux and the other side collaboration is that I feel like the type of player that the other side appeals to is going to be very different from your average Malifaux player. Mm. Like, playing through it, like, you know, hearing Jim express, he's like, oh, I'm not sure if I can get into a game with that much complexity. Like, playing the other side, it is much more abstracted and much simpler to compared to Malifaux. Like, I don't think they really share that much in common. But I can understand why the general idea would be that, oh, this is just going to be Foe at army scale, because of how it's being marketed and how, like, little information and, like, I guess, you know, because there isn't really an active player base right now to really dispel that idea.
Right. To me, that actually lets me transition quite naturally into one of my biggest complaints with how they're handling the other side. And that's that currently it feels like they are trying to prop up the other side by linking the models in it to Malifaux, which from a practical standpoint, it makes a lot of sense. And if the other side didn't have all these, you know, didn't have the issues that I'm going to get to in a second, maybe this wouldn't be a problem for me. But currently, it feels like their survival strategy for the other side is to make the other side models appealing to Malifaux players, right? So, like, with the Guild Mage or the Gwissen or whatever, I do not have you know, access to Weird's internal sales data or whatever. This is not a statement that is going to be borne out by factual evidence. It's merely anecdotal. But my belief is that more people have bought the other side starter set for Malifaux than for the other side. And I would actually further contend that it's not even close, right? It's like a 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 margin against. I think, you know, Weird owes it to both existing other side players and, you know, future players that they, you know, they are trying to get people into Malifaux. They owe it to their customer base to make a clear statement as to what's going on with other side. Is this a product that's going to be supported in the future? Is this something that's going to stand on its own? The army sets that Jim referenced, right? These older army sets that are made in kind of the softer plastic that I personally don't mind. Yes, the material isn't great, but it's, you know, it's fine for me. But we've seen with the other side starter set, with like these pre-assembled, like the nightmare boxes, like the Halloween ones they've made, the Lady Justice mm-hmm. one, they're using now a better, harder plastic. Are, you know, the original product lines going to be continually, or are they going to continue with that softer plastic, or are they going to transition to the harder plastic? People deserve to know that before they buy a product. They might very well say, look, I'm not interested in the softer plastic if a better material is coming along. Is the other side a game that's going to be supported with updates, with, you know, rules clarifications? Are they going to fix infinite victory point loops? You know, these are all things that are just very basic, that if you are putting a product out there in the marketplace and you're pitching it to existing customers, right, you owe it to those customers to be clear about your intentions. And I'm with you, Colgan, right now, where I cannot recommend the other side because I don't know if it's going to be around in a year. I don't know if at some point they'll just fold the other side and just repackage the models that have Malifaux stats as Malifaux models, and then the rest will just be like, you know, weird trivia things that exist out there or something, right? Like Puppet War boxes now or right? So I backed the Kickstarter for the other side at like the Tyrant level. And that was the level you needed to get 4 army boxes. And I guess you could have got 4 of the same army. But I, like I'm sure pretty much everyone else who got the Tyrant one, got 1 of each. And then I got enough add-ons to basically get the entire product line. I think like I missed a box or two or something, because I think I know just as a biographical fact that I don't own the entire product line. But I bought in hard for the other side. And I, you know, betrayal is like a really dramatic word, but I feel let down by the way Weird has administered the other side. And that, you know, sort of like relic of indignation, right? Like that lingering bitterness is a hurdle that I have to overcome every time I see like a cool other side thing, right? Like my first reaction is like this sense of victimization. Which, you know, again, I know these are like dramatic terms, but it's the way I feel. And that despite the fact that these other side reveals are really cool. Like the commander that they revealed, like that fox samurai dude, he looks amazing. That the same faction gets a war elephant. That kind of reminds me of one of the evil factions in Lord of the Rings gets a war elephant. And I think, you know, it's kind of similar or whatever. But those look like models I want to play with. But the other side is not necessarily a game that I feel like it would be a smart move to support at this moment.
Yeah, I think like we're just saying, even if they do like a full release of this new faction, like what does that mean for all the players that want to get into the other side? Oh, here you go. You can be one faction. Have fun. There's 4 others, but fuck you. You're never going to get them.
Yeah, I mean, with Guild and Court of Two, that's 6 factions, right? And then the Kimon, is that going to be another faction? I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry.
My understanding is, and technically, Guild, Court of Two, and Kimon are sub-factions or like ally factions that go with existing factions. So the Three Kingdoms is the main big faction and the Kimon is the add-on faction. Just like Guild works with Abyssinia or the Brits and
the King's Empire.
Yeah. And the Court of Two are with all the Griblies, Cult Burning Man and Hordes. So they're not even full factions. It's five big factions and three mini factions.
Well, so I know originally that was the idea, like Court of Two was going to support the Malifaux, because in the other side, which I don't mean like gamer splaying, but I know you said you don't play the other side. So in right. in the other side, basically the factions are part of like two super factions, Earthside and Malifaux side. Mm-hmm. And I know Court of Two was kind of this like sub faction that was meant to support the Malifaux side, and Guild was, again, sort of a sub faction meant to support the Earthside ones. But once you release a starter set for something, you know, I think the implication is that you're going to be able to play that thing for one. For another, the Three Kingdoms seem like they should be an Earthside faction, because those are Earthside political entities. So if it's an Earthside faction that also works with the Court of Two, I mean, I guess that's kind of interesting, but like, how does that work out? And I freely admit all these things might be explained, and I don't know the explanation because I'm disconnected from the other side, because I am disgruntled with the other side. And so these should be warning signs. I am ripe fruit, right, for weird. I am an easy customer, and I am not happy with, you know, the way they're handling that product line. And I don't think that I'm alone.
It's a game that I wish I could play against other people. But like, I, you know, like I was saying, like, I can't in good conscience, like, get other people to buy in. I saw some of the stuff, I knew you had stuff, so I picked some up, and, like, played some games, it was great, but, like, I don't want to go to someone else at the store, and it's like, hey, you should buy into this game so you can play with me and Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, so the thing is, I know that, like, a handful of people have the other side stuff at the store. Mm-hmm. And even at the like the old store before they moved, we were doing demos for a while with some people who had armies. Amusingly, it seemed like everyone at the store had Gibbering Hordes armies. There were like five people who had Gibbering Hordes armies, and I just brought in other stuff so that people could play with them. So the player base, I think, is out there, and you know the sculpts are really neat. The game is actually a really good game, and I do think, you know, there might have been production issues or whatever that kind of set the game back. But it had a solid foundation, and it has stumbled. And that's going to happen to products sometime. My issue is not that they've run into supply chain issues or that there was a pandemic or whatever. My issue is that Weird is not... like there are things under Weird's control that they're not doing to kind of reassure the customer base. Like I said, Weird could be explicit about how they intend to handle these previous products. Are they going to move them on to the better material or not, right? Like, we could be explicit about supporting the game more often with like, rules changes or with, like, gaining grounds packets and stuff like that. Objectives have changed, I think, maybe once or whatever, but not nearly as commonly as Malifaux. And they do not do those things. And so when they don't do the simple things, it's hard to believe they're going to do the difficult ones mm-hmm. or the expensive ones. So, yeah, I guess we don't want to spend the whole day ranting about the other side, but I'm on board with you on that one. Do you have any other grievances, or should we go to Jim?
If they do reprint the new stuff, they need to get a new sculpt for the Abyssinian Titan, because that thing is fucking atrocious.
Oh, what's the problem with it?
So all the other Titans are amazing, but the Abyssinian Titan is like a three-legged thing with like three guys with machine guns, and it's like really small and tiny, and the guys that are piloting it are of a smaller scale than the infantry sculpts that you have. So you have like, it's just like the scale is all wrong. It's just like so lame. Cause like Abyssinia is like, I mean, from how it's shown, I think they're the ones with like the most knowledge of like Soulstone powered technology is mm-hmm. my understanding. Mm-hmm. And then like, you know, the King's Empire has this like Gundam looking motherfucker with like a giant gun and this giant like power fist and looks cool as all hell, and then Abyssinia was like, all right, well, we made this thing that kind of walks, let's put machine guns on it and call it a day.
Gotcha.
It's also got like this funny little tiny flag on top, which God. Like you just imagine it was given this flag to make it feel better, because that's how sad like the little flag on it looks. It's definitely the most disappointing of the Titan sculpts in my opinion.
And the rest of the faction, like, all the other sculpts are so cool. And then, well, yeah, it's just like, oh my god.
Yeah, that's the thing. It doesn't, like, the other sculpts look really high tech. And then this one just looks, I don't know, so primitive by comparison.
Yeah, they found some machine guns lying around. They strapped it onto this thing.
And then like, they stuck some kids in to, like, pilot it.
They don't want to waste good soldiers on this piece of shit.
I think expecting a resculpt of that is a little unrealistic, but I would be on board for one. Sure. All right, so, Jim, what's robbing the Delmarva area the wrong way?
I don't know if it's Delmarva. It's more my observation of the community so far as it is right now. And you touched on it earlier. It's the new player roadmap. There's two parts to this. One is a lore aspect, and one is a gameplay aspect. So the lore aspect, Colgan, you and I were talking just before we started recording. The main source of information about the game is in the books that have the model data, or model cards, and like the free magazine that they put out through DriveThruRPG, or they did once upon a time. Great. That's been collated into the podcast known as Breachside Broadcast, which folks should be listening to because it is a delight. Great. I went to the Breachside Broadcast the other day because someone had asked me about, what episode is this thing in? I think it was that infamous question about the Red Library. Mm-hmm. Infamous question being, what episode is the Red Library story in? And I don't have it memorized. And I went to look for it and I realized that on my podcatcher, the Breachside Broadcast episodes 1 through 39 didn't exist.
God, no.
It started at 40. And I saw this on the Discord and I posted it in there, but I didn't do a follow-up thing. But just that got me thinking, there is no lexicanum. There is no collected source or wiki of lore about the characters in a written format. There is Defective Dice and other YouTube content creators who do lore deep dives on characters, and those are valuable.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't know that that channel exists, it can be a little difficult to access information about the characters' stories in, bite-sized, summarized formats. And I don't know. I think that for a narrative game, which I think Malifaux is fundamentally a narrative game, because it's driven by characters, you don't have a lot of build your own heroes. Everyone has a name. Everyone has a place in the story.
Mm-hmm.
It would be very nice to have a resource that has, like, even if it's simple as on the page for the Master on Weird's website, at the bottom it said, here are the stories featuring this character in these documents, or heck, you can even download them here if it's free stuff that's available elsewhere. I know that's a lot of footwork to do to have lore put in there, but it would just be nice to have. The big thing is new player onboarding. Right now, you guys have talked about how do you get someone into the game. I'm trying to word this in a way that makes sense. I don't think it's reasonable to expect someone to want to dive into every crew to find the playstyle that fits them before they pick a crew. I really do think that they should go with something that they're going to be jazzed to build and paint for their first crew. Because fundamentally, I think due in part to the model number issue, I don't think crew identity is nearly as important as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of out-of-keyword hires or versatile hires available means that you can pull off the same thing in most keywords in a faction. And most factions can do any kind of play style at this point. Some may be a bit better at something than others, but I think you can armor spam any faction at this point. I think you can, do ranged guns pew pew in any faction. You can summon in any faction. So you don't really need to get hung up on, oh, geez, you went with this master instead of that master. And that's the second thing. This is a game that is predominantly played at 50 soul stones with a master as your leader. Starter boxes are a product that I don't know what the community expects them to be versus what Weird expects them to be.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen so many complaints about starter boxes being bad onboarding, bad demo product. I don't agree. Because I think if you're doing a demo, you're trying to showcase the game mechanics and how it works, and you're not necessarily trying to be cutthroat, win the game with a demo. And so for that purpose, you can do a game with two starter boxes, showcase the game off, and if someone is interested, they'll go find a master that goes with it. The idea that you have to balance starter boxes against each other from a competitive standpoint, to me, tells me that there's an expectation of a meta of starter box versus starter box, or a meta for Henchman Hardcore. I don't really see a whole lot of people spending an awful lot of time talking about, oh, here's my top 10 tips for how to win at Henchman Hardcore. It is a more swingy format. It's more for just fun, as far as I can see it. So I don't think starter boxes are bad products. I think they're doing what they're supposed to do, which is giving you a demo experience for a reasonable cost with pre-assembled models. So if you like the game, you can go in and get a master and play the game with masters where the game is based around. Does that mean that some of the boxes are obviously better than others? Sure. There's always going to be something that is objectively worse than something else when you're not playing with the same rules for every box. But like outside of Explorer Society, and that's only because their minions are insignificant, all the starter boxes that we have to date are pretty comparable against each other when you just look at them, when you play them. So if you're coming in and saying, I expect to play every model in this starter box in my first 10 games of Malifaux, and if I don't do that, it's a failed product, I think you have unrealistic expectations.
Well, so I think starter boxes are terrible onboarding products. And I actually had never, amusingly, if you go back through previous episodes, I've actually never talked about the balance of them. And I never really thought about it from that standpoint. Although I do think that if you're pitching things as starter products, they should be balanced against each other because you want people to come away with it. They don't know anything about the game. So if two people who are trying to learn the game buy starter boxes and the game is horribly imbalanced, that's going to give people a terrible impression of the game. Now, fortunately, it sounds like from what you're saying, that's not the way the starter boxes are, that they're all like reasonably balanced against each other. And I'm relieved to hear that because that wasn't even anything I had thought about before. I think that they're terrible products because the models are not necessarily straightforward ones. Like you mentioned, the Explorer Society, Tannenbaum and Mr. Nagatoro, or you know, however you pronounce those two names, those are not beginner models. Whereas if you look at, say, a master box, the masters might be a little complicated, but the minions that come with them tend to be, I have a stat 5 punch and a stat 5 gun, and that's, you know, what I am. I also think that they're bad products because they don't give you a master, and the game is centered around masters. I think learning the game in some sort of alternate format that hardly, well, I shouldn't say hardly anyone plays, but is definitely a minority play experience, is not really the way that you want to introduce people to the game. And I also think that they're misleading because very few people, in my experience, get into Malifaux with the starter box and then expand from there. You know, that's not really the collection path of the game. You know, for 40K, if you buy a start collecting box, you do then expand off that. Whereas you might buy the start collecting box and then never want those models. If you look at the Outcast one, gives you Seeker models. There is no Seeker Outcast master, right? Like Yannick is going to see plenty of play, but the Catalan models, eh. So, you know, in my opinion, I think the starter boxes are terrible onboarding ones. But I mean, I am really glad to hear from what you're saying that you can buy two starter boxes and play against each other and have a good game. That, you know, that is at least a point in their favor.
Gogan, any thoughts?
Yeah, for me too, I guess like Malifaux, I see it as being very master focused. So I feel like having the starter boxes not have a master can be, I feel like, misleading to new players. You can find a master that goes with those starter models, but it might not necessarily be a master that person wants to play as. I agree with you that, you know, a starter product, it doesn't need to be like competitively viable. So you can just take this starter box and like start going to tournaments. But I think that it should be able to encapsulate like the basics of the experience of the game. And I feel like having no master and no totem goes against like what your standard Malifaux experience is. And I feel like, you know, how Jeff was saying with the Outcast models, how if you buy the Outcast faction starter, well, if you want to continue to use those models, you're either hiring out of keyword or you're going over to Explorer Society, which I feel like is going to be, I guess, very difficult for a new player to navigate. So I think this, you know, like you can definitely use the starter boxes, but to me, it feels like you need to have a level of knowledge that I wouldn't expect someone just starting Malifaux to have in order to understand like exactly what they're getting into with these starter boxes versus, you know, like 40K universally, if you're starting an army, it's like, go get the starter box. It's the best deal. It has, you know, the standard units. And then once you learn the game, you can start like, you know, launching off from there. Like, yeah, maybe you won't use like half the stuff in your starter box anymore, but at least you have something solid to play until you get there. Versus like if you get a starter box in Malifaux and he's like, hey, I want to play Malifaux now. It's like, okay, good. Now you have to go buy a Master Core box. And then you can start playing the game and then figuring it out. And I feel like that is, as far as like what I would expect from a starter box within this, in the wargaming scene, I feel like it's also a miss.
Yeah, to me, the biggest knock against these starters boxes is that they are not beginner products, right? So other than the Outcast one, which, you know, I do think actually, aside from the master issue, the actual models in them are straightforward enough to where I think beginners are going to play them well. But you look at other ones, I mentioned the Explorer Society one as I think a particularly egregious example. But, you know, the Arcanist models that are coming up in Madness and Malifaux, that are going to be this, you know, those are not starter models, right? Those are models where you really need to understand about something about the game in order to use them well. And if you want to learn the basics of the game, you stick a bunch of stat 5 punch, stat 5 gun models, and you give them a leader that has like a synergistic thing, and that'll teach you how to play Malifaux. And I feel like these starters are, they're trying to do too much. And partially because I think the Weird has not really thought out this starter concept so much as it's like, okay, here's some models that we're releasing for these other factions at this time that we're releasing Explorer Society, right? Because that's really where these models date to. Explorer Society came out and it's like, well, the other factions are going to get some models too. And we are going to put those together into a starter set. In my opinion, that is not how you make a product that is intended to onboard new people.
You know, on that note for the starter set, that might have been a nicer way to like introduce these new keywords, right? Because, you know, you have like the starter sets in 40K where it's two different factions. Like, you know, most people are going to split the box. And I think that's not uncommon, right? Because most people aren't like, I'm going to start two factions at the same time. But instead of releasing like individual core boxes from them, you could have released like two masters in a two-player starter. I honestly feel like the Master Core boxes are a great starter product.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they give you Master, they give you your Totem, you get a Henchman, and you get three minions. Like, are you ever going to use all three minions in, like, competitive games after that? Probably not. But I would never be like, oh, because of that, you shouldn't get the starter box. Even if the minions aren't that good, I still think it's just the best way to start the game. And I don't even think that it's necessarily bad if the minions that are in there aren't, you know, I guess like some people worry about being like competitively viable.
So I just want to say that, yes, I do think that picking a core box is the preferred way to go when you start out playing the game. To take this onboarding thing a bit further, because I agree with the point you guys are making, is that, you know, fundamentally it's not conveying the message that when you hear the phrase starter box, you would expect. I think that it would be a slam dunk option for Weird to do something where they take even something as simple as take two existing core boxes that are thematically appropriate to face each other, bundle them together, throw in a deck of cards for each, the punch out markers for each, the widget, and you know what? Let's throw in some punch out terrain too. Some very basic 2D punch out boxes. Add it together, you know, average core box is $50 to $55, make it maybe $150, and you've got two core boxes plus terrain and widgets, and that's your starter product. And maybe you cycle it. Maybe you do it on a rotation where, like, the first one for the first month, 3 months, first quarter is Lady Justice versus Sheamus. Iconic matchup. You get all the bits there. And then the next time, you've got Karis versus Titania. Boom. Another two factions represented. Terrain markers that you can, you know, introduce. Something like that. It gives you everything you need to play with two players. It gives you something that you can get separate if you didn't want to buy that box. So you're not feeling like you have to buy that box to get the Guild Mage. Like the two-player, the other side starter set right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do rotate it, sure, you miss out on maybe the punch-out tokens, but you're not missing out on anything specific that you wouldn't be able to get anywhere else. So there's no FOMO, there's no, oh, geez, you got to get it now, pressure on the player. I think something like that would be a great product to explore, because I don't think you can have an agnostic master pairing in a starter product. Because in second edition, they had, you know, the Asylum versus Half-Bloods.
Right.
And the problem, and the idea there is they were mercenaries. And at the time, for those who don't know, mercenaries could be hired regardless of faction at plus one cost, rather than the current out of keyword cost. You can't have a colorless master, so to speak, in the current format.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it really supports that. And releasing something that you can't play outside of the starter box contents doesn't make sense either. But what does make sense is saying, we can go ahead and add these two sets of sprues together because they're already prepackaged with this other stuff. And it's as simple as figuring out what you want to bundle together. And maybe even do a special where a player can order, like a place could order a bundle like this, where you pick your two opponents. Maybe made to order is a little too much pressure on the back end. I don't know. That's something for Weird to figure out if they ever go something like this route.
I mean, I think it would actually be quite simple. You would have the starter set materials, and then you could just drop in the core boxes for the requested masters, and, you know, boom.
Yeah, or even have a starter set kit that is just widgets and tokens. You pick the factions for your two boxes, and then you go ahead and buy them together as a bundle on the web store.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I think that'd be really easy.
And that gets to the second part of this onboarding process, which is Weird does not have a dedicated henchman program anymore.
Oh, yeah, fuck.
And like Colgan, you were saying that you didn't know if you could be very helpful for someone looking to get into the game.
Mm-hmm.
Having an ambassador for your game is, I think, one of the best ways to help grow a local meta. You know, I think each of us has, in our various metas, taken on the role at times to be like the person people go, hey, I have a question. What's this? Tell me about this. Let me know. What do you think about this? Because you just happen to have played more and you have more game experience. I know that there's a lot of work that goes into running a volunteer program, like the Henchman program, like the Privateer Press Ganger program. And I think every major minis game up to this point that had such a program has disbanded it. So I don't know what the solution is to reinstate something like that. But if there was even something like a guidance document for onboarding, because if they had like a blurb, like, oh, someone's looking to get in the game, maybe these questions can help you direct them to these kinds of keywords or this kind of approach. Even something as simple as not a gaining grounds document, but a short blurb that's like, hey, when you're playing your first few games of Malifaux, we recommend you run Turf War, Assassinate, Breakthrough as your scenario. We recommend standard deployment. You know, we all have our own ways that we like to run those first few games, but having a scenario that is specific to a starter set might be better than trying to shoehorn in 50 stone balanced scenarios. Like, you could do, the strategy is one model drops a marker on the other side of the board. Call it something fancy. I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to boil this down to is Weird has been pretty clear that they want you to play Foe how your group wants to play it. They're giving self-governance out to the metas to play. If you look at the Gaining Grounds document, it's like, hey, here's all these variants. You can pick how you want to play. But that's all good if you have a group of players who know how to play the game. A similar amount of document or similar kind of document for people onboarding with a focus on new player experience, I think is something that would be very helpful that is not currently existing. I probably repeated myself several times there, so apologies, viewers, good God. But you guys get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm 100% on board with what you're saying.
I mean, I think when you're mentioning actually having like a package starter scenario, I think that's a great idea, because now that I'm thinking about it, I feel like the only real entry point at this right now into Malifaux is to just like kind of get exposed to the competitive scene right away in terms of like Gaining Grounds. And, you know, I think it'd be nice to have kind of like, yeah, I mean, the starter set I think would be an amazing idea, because I think it also addresses your issue with the lore, right? Because you can have a lore relevant starter box, like, oh, hey, these masters like hate each other. And then, you know, you can put in a little bit, you know, have like the little intro blurb and like the condensed rule book or that you throw into the starter set. Yeah, it would be great if something like that existed. But yeah, like the more and more you talk about this, it just makes me realize like how miserable it is to start as a new player in Malifaux without knowing someone who's, you know, been into the game for a while already and can kind of help you navigate all the weird landmines you can step on.
Yeah, I can't even imagine how two people who, like, let's just say, you know, two gaming buddies see Malifaux stuff randomly and no one around them plays. And so they buy the stuff and they're just trying to learn the game that way. Wait, that's not, I and pretty much everyone that I know came into Malifaux with a more experienced player teaching them the game. And I think Weird is just kind of conceded that, oh, well, that's just how you learn the game, and not made much of an effort to improve the onboarding process. And you see kind of fits and starts with it, you know, things like releasing a starter box. Although, as I've said, you know, many times, and in fact, even earlier in this episode, I don't think it's a good product for beginners. That is a step in just having starter materials is a step in the right direction. So I just think Weird would be well served to do something like Jim is describing and have like a smoother entryway into the game. Yeah. Do you have anything else, or is it
a time for my grievances?
I just want to, you know, echo and add on to what you just said, in that I do think that Weird is cognizant of and has made steps to provide new player onboarding product and some suggestions. I'm just wishing that they were a little more explicit in what they would recommend, or coming up with a recommendation rather than leaving it to player exploration to find, because of how complex the game can be.
Mm-hmm.
So with that said, I think it is time for your grievances, Jeff.
All right. Well, the smooth jazz Delmarva grievances are now over, and it's time for Los Angeles Rage. First, I am still dissatisfied with the pace of errata changes. You know, I hate to repeat myself every year, but I am going to until this changes or I die. I think that Weird needs to be more aggressive with the pace of errata changes. I really do think that a format closer to video games with patch notes is better. I think that they need to leverage the fact that they have the app. You know, personally, I would like to see sort of an open beta stage of development, right? Like right now they have internal development and they have quote unquote closed, right? It is possible, I think, to join the playtest environment, but they have like a closed beta and then they release the models. And as we have seen many times, models are coming out that are problematic, and expecting more people to enter the playtest is just not realistic. As much as, you know, it might be great for the game if the playtest pool were twice as big, most people are not going to make the effort to join, as has been borne out by the evidence. Okay. But let's say the app had a category of cards that were like Dead Man's Hand in that they weren't, you know, they weren't tournament legal, they weren't official, but they were these open beta cards that anyone could see them. Anyone could just pop them into a game that they were going to play. It would increase the exposure, even if it didn't increase the number of games those models were used in by even a single game, which, of course, they would. But let's just pretend for a minute they didn't. Just the fact that more people are seeing them is going to increase the, you know, the amount of analysis that they're going to get, and the review that they're going to get is going to become much more rigorous. And personally, and I mentioned this in other episodes, I am concerned with the way Weird's development process works. So overall, I think Weird does a great job. I am a huge fan of Malifaux. I love the way that they've managed to make everything so varied and yet still like largely competitive. But I don't think anyone would deny that there are balance issues and sort of conceptual issues with the way some of these things have happened. And to me, I see power creep as a significant issue, not just for, you know, Malifaux, but basically for any game that doesn't refresh its meta regularly. So, you know, one of the ways Magic gets around, you know, quote unquote around power creep is that in Standard, cards are only legal for a certain period of time, right? So maybe newer cards are better than older cards, but because the Standard meta, and I do have to put Standard in quotation because I was reading an article that actually like Commander is now the most common format or whatever. But, you know, philosophically, they have an environment where the meta refreshes. And if Malifaux had that too, if more things cycled into Dead Man's Hand more frequently, and then if they cycled out, they changed or whatever, you might say the meta would refresh, and so power creep would be less of an issue. But to me, power creep is becoming an issue. I think when you see, you can see this most clearly with Hexbow and Thunder Archer. It's not the most important example, but it's such a clear one because you are not usually able to compare models directly with that like level of precision, but you can with those two. And it's just night and day what kind of game, you know, the two models kind of sit in and which model you would prefer. So, you know, I guess this is multiple grievances all in one, or I guess you could like maybe form them into sort of like an overarching grievance about development. But I think I am not in the room at the earliest stages of development. I don't know what those decisions look like. But I see, you know, model reveals, and then I see models being played. And I think if Weird had an intermediate stage where models were, you know, not yet live, but more widely available, they'd be better off. And I think if Weird didn't wait once a year to change things, they would be better off. And I think if Weird wasn't so committed to only changing a few models, they'd be much better off. And I've had this argument with other people multiple times, so I understand that I'm probably in the minority. Many people seem to prefer stability, which I do 100% agree is important, over the ability to make changes. But in my opinion, if Weird did something where they made like one change a quarter, then they would, I think, end up with a mechanically stronger game. So that's my first complaint. Basically, you know, the pace of errata and the testing environment.
I mean, on that note, one thing I thought was interesting is, so one of the new games I took up recently and talked about was Bushido, but their developers actually just have a live errata document. It's just like a Google Doc where it's like, oh shit, something is in our game is broken, and they'll actually just update it there. And then they'll also do like periodic full errata updates or like balance changes. So I thought that was kind of a cool way to handle that. Cause I think I remember telling you that there's this one rule that made it so you could basically just straight up kill one of the enemy models and they didn't have a lot of recourse. And that's something that they just patched out pretty easily.
Yeah. So, you know, when that like whole McMorney 2 Seamus thing came to light, can you imagine if it wasn't, you know, a month before errata release, and it may have even influenced why the errata dropped a bit early, you know, compared to its traditional sort of later spring release? Like, what if that had come to light in the summer? Would we be stuck with it for a year? Probably. I kind of don't understand the resistance that I get when I talk about this with other people. Frankly, to me, although it's more work on Weird's point, for the player base, it's all upside. So I again, it kind of baffles me that people are like, no, I like how things only change once a year and how they only change 8 models a year or whatever it is. But since the majority of the player base seems to prefer it that way, maybe I'm just wrong. I don't know. What's the Delmarva view of the situation?
There's diminishing returns. There has to be some amount of time between when something hits play. And right now, I think there is a very strong tendency to make declarative, strong statements about how something performs on the table with not actually putting it on the table.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are some things that have strong initial responses that bear out, but there's also things that, you know, as recently as today, I've seen people talking about how they can't believe that people have slept on Ulix 1 being as good as he can be. And he's been the same since the launch of 3.
I mean, that's probably linked to the performance in the Vassal World series.
Not so much.
Really?
It's partially due to, you know, so a very prominent figure in the Vassal World series, Insomniac Wolf, also plays very well and has played Ulix over 200 times, I think he said, as most recent update on it. And he's had good success in the UK meta, which admittedly, I don't hear an awful lot about what's going on in the UK meta, but I know that it is very different from the US meta. But the reason I talk about diminishing returns is the cautionary tale about Warmer Hordes, which was that Warmer Hordes imploded because they went to having a almost weekly change to their game to try to accomplish more regular balance. And it became a point where it was impossible to keep track of what is the current rule set, what is just beta.
Right.
And if you reach a point where you cannot keep track of what is the current ruling, your game dissolves. So I agree that it can be frustrating to go as long without errata. It would be great to have a more regular response of like, hey, here's an FAQ at every half year. And if we're going to make changes, we're going to make changes with putting in several months worth of playtest to make sure that, you know, yeah, we may not get it right. Hopefully we get it closer to right after a couple months of playtest. And the other thing is, I don't know if you noticed this, but it's not spring. And folks have gotten their Black Friday sale items. And the people who got the Terra Lady J box, the card for 33 in that box is different than the one that was in that is currently in the app.
Oh, no, I hadn't heard that.
So they have made a change. There's nothing been official about it, so I wouldn't be surprised if we hear about it on Wednesday as of time of this recording.
Mm-hmm.
The Waldo's Weekly to talk about it. If this comes out and it's been talked about, well, now you know when we recorded this. But yeah, they changed 33. 33 does not have Pine Box anymore, apparently. It has a melee attack that has the Glimpse the Void trigger not built in.
Ah, interesting.
And also lost the ability to grab the Black Joker with Backtrack on their tactical. So that immediately kills the 33 kidnap with Terra 2. It kills synergy with Lady Justice 2, who apparently was oppressive with coffins in the UK. So with that change, two of the biggest NPEs have been removed from the game. So
yeah, that's good.
I would not be surprised if there were more changes addressing NPEs coming. And this is only about 6 to 7 months since the last errata dropped, I think.
Well, okay, but like saying only 6 to 7 months, I mean, this 33 kidnap issue was like pretty clearly a problem from, you know, a month after it hit live.
But it's not putting up wins in competitive events.
Well, okay, but that's, so, you know, that's not the point, right? The majority of the player base doesn't play in those competitive events. I mean, fixing NPEs is arguably much more important than having a balanced game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it's important to remove NPEs, but I'm also wanting to point out that it's fixing an NPE, but if the focus is on the majority of people who are not playing in competitive events, then are they going to be running into these super NPE combos done and executed well? Like, is this an opponent who brings competitive level play against someone who doesn't play competitively? Because that sounds like that's a player issue, not a game issue.
Sure, but I mean, of course, at the same time, if you play 33 Atara, I mean, if you just happen to play them and you have a broken model, right? Like, that's also where balance issues can potentially become NPEs, right? Because it's like, we both just play at a casual level. We don't really know what we're doing, but your stuff is better, so you win, right? And I just butt my head against the wall. I don't want an unstable game, but I don't think once a quarter erratas are, you know, would destabilize the game. And I think that you could even have like a, you know, like a row, row, row your boat type development where things are in different stages and they get pushed along and other things are starting behind it and they get pushed along every quarter and so on and so forth. So that, you know, you have some stuff that you're testing for immediate, maybe some stuff you're fixing that's live, some stuff you're working on in open beta, some stuff in closed beta, and some stuff in development. And every quarter, you know, it just gets pushed along forward. And to me, Malifaux is the kind of game where the player base is pretty good at identifying issues that come up. And I think Weird's errata philosophy is self-limiting in some ways that confuse me. Like, why are the errata packs always the exact same size, right? I don't know why that is, but for whatever reason, Weird decides they want errata packs at a certain size, and then that limits what they are willing to change, which, you know, I don't get. They have the app. They already say, go to Wargame Vault for certain kinds of cards, like upgrade cards or second edition art cards. So, in my opinion, they don't need to be tied to physical errata packs anymore. You know, they should feel free to change more models than they could fit in whatever packaging, you know, content they decide they want to use for errata packs. I'm convinced, I will admit without evidence, but I'm convinced the reason why they've gone through like the take the hit errata rulings that they have is to avoid reprinting cards. I think that's also why they went through the whole another thing. It's because they were hoping to find resolutions that would work without having to do reprints. And look, I get that, you know, not only is it reasonable for Weird to want to do that, on a certain level, it's efficient. If you can fix things without having to make a bigger change, a smaller change is preferable. I'm 100% on board with that. But I feel like there, you know, these circumstances and Take the Hit and another are both two great examples where that doesn't work. This is kind of a thing where I have a bee in my bonnet, and I feel like I'm kind of a lone voice on this. And more people, I think, are far more sympathetic to Jim's point of view than mine. But it's, you know, my grievance. So there.
Right. And you're entitled to your grievance. I want to be clear. You are entitled to your grievance. And I am not trying to say that you are not.
I mean, I also do think that the game would be better served with my point of view. But I guess that's something that we'll never know because my point of view is never going to prevail on this. So the next grievance I have is, I guess, kind of related, but I really think that Weird needs to do a better job of unifying language. You know, we mentioned this on the caster reveal episode with some specific examples that, you know, that reveal just brought to mind things like how there's all this phrasing that is not the same. And so it brings up questions. So things like, at the end of activation and after the end of activation, those are phrases that exist that Weird has said mean the same thing. In that particular example, Weird said it meant the same thing in a private message to someone else that person was nice enough to share with me. I have not seen an actual FAQ or errata entry on that. So that's just how that is. At the start of activation and when this model activates, that means the same thing. Target and targeted don't mean the same thing. So these language issues, to me, Weird just needs to be better about unifying its language. And ultimately, you know, I think the targeted, as I've mentioned many times, and I think, you know, honestly, I think I've established pretty clearly that I'm correct here. I think the cover concealment issue in the rulebook is the most clear example that Weird did not intend this verb-noun distinction. And I really don't hear people argue back about that anymore. So either I beat them into submission, you know, like the uncle at Thanksgiving, or I'm just right. In my opinion, like, that's pretty settled at this point, that it wasn't intentional. But I think, you know, it's about sloppiness. It's about, you know, just failures of editing. And it would be fine if it was never the case where these differences in wording had different effects. Then it's just like, yeah, okay, they use a bunch of phrases that sound the same, but everything means the same. But no, they are willing to stand on rulings like targeted. And so that means it's really important that the same effects use the same language, or like things that are meant to have the same timing use the same language. What do you guys think of that?
I've been beaten to submission. You're correct.
I do think that it would not be bad for the game if at some point a unifying technical writer type could go through and just be like, all these things, control find, control replace. That would be great. And heck, you could even do something like the Digimon TCG, and they use a lot of like in brackets with color coded things for different phases of play for different effects to occur.
Mm-hmm.
So having things like, this is this step, this is the end step, it is green. If you see a green end step in brackets, that means it happens in the end step. And then just like almost like a trigger, like you have trigger symbol, name, thing, end step, name, thing. And that way you don't have to have the perpetual confusion about after resolving or when resolving, timing windows, things like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I find that defensive triggers are something that newer players really struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
I personally don't. When you get experienced, you know, when you play the game long enough, it's hard to understand what's going to trip people up, right? Because you're now used to it. But I think that a lot of newer players have kind of struggled with defensive triggers. And I don't know if that's like timing or if it's more because of just triggers are generally like action-based or whatever. But yeah, I think maybe some iconography might be useful, but definitely unified language, I think, would be helpful. Touching on kind of the model bloat issue, for me, it has to do with release bloat. Because of the way Weird makes things available, like the titles, right? The titles added a huge amount of complexity to the game. And I think that Madness of Malifaux has come too soon on the heels of Malifaux Burns, which seems silly to say, because I actually think that a lot of the models in Malifaux Madness development probably date back to when the Explore Society came out, because I think like the starter box, like the additional models each faction were getting from in their starter set, I think that probably was part of the Explore Society development, where it's like, well, releasing a whole new faction and everyone else is getting some stuff, because, you know, Weird as a company has to sell stuff to exist. And I do not begrudge them of that, right? Like, I want Weird to exist. I want Malifaux to thrive. So I don't begrudge the fact that they need to release new stuff to stay in business. But I think that Malifaux Burns added so much to the game that I think for the health of the game, they would have been better off if that had been like two development cycles instead of one.
I honestly thought that they would take a year after Burns to focus on the other side and alternate years where they have like sort of like how Games Workshop alternates months for releases of AOS and 40K, dedicate an entire year to promoting game A, with game B being like, yes, here's the documents, here's the gaining grounds, but we're not going to add new content because you already have a whole bunch of it, and, you know, get everything out. Because I know it's not in their control, but the fact that we have Madness of Malifaux coming out and the Tony Anya title box is still not out, you know, it's a bit frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that they can't control the shipment and all that stuff that's been discussed umpteen times everywhere. But you can give yourself, like you said, an, you know, 2 years of test of playing with stuff, which is plenty of time if you have, like you said, at least a quarterly or twice a year, some kind of errata pass. You know, that's between 4 and 8 errata passes through content. That should be sufficient to make sure everything is in a pretty good spot before you add in new content, right?
Yep. No, I agree 100%. Kogan, I mean, I assume I know your answer to that, but are you on board with the kind of more time to have digested Malifaux Burns?
Yeah, definitely on time. And it would also be great if they actually made a push on the other side. I would be 1,000% in favor of that if they spent a year actually doing something with it.
All right, so I have other grievances, but I'm just going to go with one more due to time. And this, I wish that when they made a nightmare version of a keyword, that they would follow through and finish that keyword in that version. I love, for instance, the 1988 Mayfang models. I wish that they had just, you know, continued through and made the rest of her keyword in that version. With the, you know, the new Hoffman one, right? How they give you both title versions, like, you know, potentially you can get both title versions. That's quite cool. They have the new box for the Black Friday one, the count as the Riot Breakers or whatever. I would like them to continue those. And for me, personally, I really like the Nightmare sculpts. And I think that is a way that they could sell me stuff without adding to the model bloat, which is already an issue for the game. And it might be silly to be like, I don't want to play with models that don't match the theme, especially since I don't paint or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I really do wish that when they released a Nightmare that they like followed through. What do you guys feel about that?
Oh my god, I am so on board this train.
Yeah. I guess that's the worst thing, because like I feel like Malifaux or like Weird, they already set up a way for them to like continue to sell models without having to add new models and new rules to the game. But like, yeah, they don't even fill out the keywords. It's like, all right, here's your core box, and then if you want to play a full 50-point game, you're just going to have to mix and match themes.
Well, like, the biggest question I see regarding these is, oh, what is an appropriate counts as for this model in the Fish Nakima crew, right? Like, what can I do to have a fishy appropriate Black Blood Shaman or something? And, like, look at any gacha game on mobile games. Look at, you know, a MOBA, like a League of Legends style game. So much of their monetization comes from skins, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these limited release window models are that format.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you have someone who's invested in the game, but is like, yeah, I really love the look of that Nightmare Hoffman. I'm going to snap it up. And yes, I do see the point a point against having an entire keyword in nightmare mode and in regular mode, because that is functionally doubling the number of sprues they need to produce for a keyword and, you know, have there and only produce off of half of those sprues at certain times of the year. So it might not make sense in that regard. But over time, if you take, I don't know, the release window for Madness of Malifaux, let's say, each keyword got 2 masters, a totem, a shared model, and say 2 minion sculpts, 3 enforcer sculpts, and like 2 henchman sculpts. I think that's somewhere around the average for them. Mm. It's like 8 or 9 sculpts, or not even sculpts, it's 8 or 9 profiles plus sculpts numbers. You're looking at between everything probably close to 100 sculpts for the Madness of Malifaux content. Mm-hmm. If you break those into sprues and skews, that could probably cover an entire Nightmare crew for that year of a model and all, like a crew and all of its possible sculpts for that crew. So yeah, I think you could make a pretty good bang for your buck there.
Yeah, I don't know how well these Nightmare sculpts sell. Anecdotally, I don't see them a ton on the table.
Oh, I do.
But I mean, I love them. I buy them all. Even masters I don't really have a ton of interest in, I buy the Nightmare boxes.
Mm-hmm. No, I've got locals who play I have 2 locals who play the Henry Rollins box alone.
Oh.
And they're using like Rollins on foot as McCabe 2 because they're like, I want to play McCabe and I want to play McCabe 2 and he's, it works for it.
Yeah.
I've seen that. I've seen the Caitlin box. I've seen the Mei Feng box. I've seen the Hoff box. Like, I've seen a, oh, and to say nothing of the Ulix box.
Oh, uh-huh.
So like,
yeah, we have a new player who's really interested in that one.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, you know, with that one too, there's the subsidiary models, right? So they actually have done a good job of expanding that line,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, almost unique for their Nightmare boxes. But you can get the Sparkle Steeds, you can get the Minicorns, and then things like the Agapult and the War Rabbit. They're not necessarily in theme, but I do know that many people do enjoy mixing those in as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, no, I mean, I think we're all on board here, and we're at an hour and a half, so let's go to the feats of strength. Colgan, do you have some feats of strength for us?
I do. I've prepared two.
All right.
One is a Jeff level question. One is a Jim level question. Maybe, because Jim's level of lore knowledge is way beyond what I can really grasp. But
yeah, way beyond me too, although I have stumped him before.
You have, and my level, it's not what it once was, I'll tell you that.
I mean, I think this is like what that line, like, you've forgotten more than we'll ever know. All right. So first, for the Jeff level feat of strength, you both mm-hmm. can answer it. So since I've been playing Jacob Lynch and 10 Thunder Slot, I figure I'd stay in that theme.
Mm-hmm.
So now that Jacob Lynch is, you know, his casino, the honeypot, is more successful and he's making money now, my question is, what has he been investing in outside of the casino in order to spread brilliance?
Hmm.
Obviously, I know the answer to this, but
I'm going
to
go with, I have an answer. I don't know if it's the correct answer, but I have an answer I want to go with.
Okay.
God damn it. Why isn't pull your finger a thing anymore?
that... see my one of my grievances.
Let's see what goes well on payday loans. That goes well with the casino.
I'm gonna say booze,
but I doubt Malifaux is that dark. Yeah, so like, yeah, maybe like fentanyl, like drugs or something.
Okay, so Jeff is saying drugs, and Jim, you said booze.
Yeah,
yeah. So Jim is correct. He has been investing in taverns selling alcohol laced with brilliance.
Yep, I'm pretty sure that's the reason that Kitty Dumont is his second henchman. Because she is clearly drinking on her in her sculpt.
Oh, is she? I never really thought about that.
She's a spirit who drinks spirits. As opposed to Shoujo, who's a spirit made of spirits.
Alright, so what's your gym level question?
All right, my gym level question is, what was McCabe's first job with the Explorer Society, and what was his compensation for that job, or his promised compensation for the job?
Hmm.
Jeff, you can go ahead and take a swing.
I want to say he has to find the red cage, and his compensation is the cool motorcycle he gets in a Nightmare box.
All right.
There are dozens of people screaming right now about what the correct answer is. I want to say that his first job with the Explorers was it's got to be something that involves going into a tomb, because that's Tomb Delver.
Mm-hmm.
And he has Lara Croft, I mean, legally distinct Lara Croft with him in keyword. So I want to say he was acquiring a relic hammer for Gretchen, just because relic hammers are like the obvious like magical MacGuffin you want to go grab. And he was promised to have his debts with the guild paid so that he wouldn't be murked by them.
Hmm. That is incorrect.
Dang it.
And Jeff, you are also incorrect.
Aw, dang. I think you're about that one.
So his first job with the Explorer Society, he was tasked to find the entrance to the Sunken City.
Oh, that makes sense.
And his compensation for it, he was promised 25% of anything he found.
Hmm. What did he find?
I forget.
A whole bunch of trouble.
He did find some kind of relic, because it's not super clear what it was. But at like the end of the story, basically the Explorer Society that hired it from, and it's revealed that they're a Nephilim, and they were interacting with the object and saying some words and it started glowing. And it's like, Ooh. Oh, now the path is cleared for the return. And then, you know, it's all ominous and stuff like that.
Oh, geez. The return?
Yeah.
That's got to be Castor related.
You know what? That's probably, that actually makes a lot of sense. It's probably Castor. Something related to Castor.
Good questions. Good questions. All right, Jim, you have any feats of strength?
I do. I have another lore question for you. And this, it's just going to be a simple one. We all know that when the Burning Man manifested in Malifaux, that it caused a ruckus and that a lot of people fell under the sway of the Burning Man through one way or another, reading books, being angry. But oddly enough, in the Bayou, gremlins were not affected by the Burning Man. Whether or not they were beneath his notice or too strong to be swayed or too drunk to be swayed is unclear. However, the pigs of the Bayou were absolutely influenced. This is why we have Ulix's title, Pork Belly Protector, riding a giant burning pig. My question to you is, what is that pig's name?
Oh, God. Oh, wow. Oh.
I mean, it has to be some kind of, like, pun or joke, considering how everything with the Bayou works.
Technically, you are correct, but not... You're on the right track, I should say.
Okay.
This is an easy one?
I didn't say that.
Okay.
Wait, no, I did say it was an easy one. Sorry.
Yeah, I did. He did say it was easy. Wow, I have no idea. Sizzler? Like,
my guess is just going to be bacon.
Neither is correct. This is a bit of... it's a simple one, but it's also a trick one. See, you may notice when you look at that the art for that sculpt, a certain tinge to the color of that pig. That is Honey, the golden piglet, from Ulix's original story, grown up.
Oh yeah, why didn't I get that? It was a reference to another lore thing.
But if you knew Ulix's original story about a golden pig...
Yeah, Jeff, if you knew anything about Malifaux lore...
But I don't! Why? Right, good one. All right. Yeah,
what about you, Jeff?
I'm doing terrible on these lore ones. Yeah, I got a couple. Okay, so first, assume a model has both Take the Hit and Manipulative. If the model uses Take the Hit to protect another target, does it get Manipulative?
No.
What about you, Colgan?
I'm just going to agree with Jim.
So I would agree as well. I feel like that is the way it's supposed to work. Now, I have seen some people arguing that because Manipulative says, quote unquote, this target, that it gets Manipulative or something, that it gets around the other rulings that have come out with Take the Hit. I'm not really convinced by it, but, you know, it just points to, I think, the continuing failure of these Take the Hit resolutions and how well served Weird would be by finally just saying that these target switching effects happen in an earlier stage of the sequence so that, you know, it's not simultaneous with these other effects, so that the you know, the new target was always the target and any effects that model has counts. And nothing from the original model counts. That's the way I think it should be resolved in the future. I'm honestly quite frustrated with Weird's failure to do it. And so I'm going to keep hammering on it. But I would agree with you guys. All right, next. With the title boxes, it's also become clear that, or not become clear, it was also the case that a lot of titles, or in fact, I think every title, got additional models. Most of these models that came out in Malifaux Burns, the non-master models, were enforcers, but some of them were minions. Can you guys name three minions that came out in Malifaux Burns?
Yes.
What about you, Colgan?
I can only think of one.
Alright. What can you think of, Colgan?
I'm not even sure if I'm getting the name right, but it's like the ice things, like the Kahlgeists?
Okay, so I think Jim has figured it out, but if I tell you that there's a little bit of a trick to this.
That's not going to help me.
Doesn't help you at all. All right, Jim, can you fill out a couple others?
So, to be clear, you mean minions
Malifaux Burns? Yes.
In Malifaux Burns. So, I'm going to go ahead and say Red Caps.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to say Drudges.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, I'm not going to say Kaltgeist because Colgan already said Kaltgeist. I'll say Catalan Rifleman.
Sure. I would also accept Guildmage or Gwissen or any numbers of one. But yeah, so if you actually think through the title boxes, it's very difficult. I don't actually know for sure if there are three. There's definitely two. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there are three. But once you add in all the Malifaux Burns, there's a ton of them. All right. So the next one I have, this is probably going to be really easy for Jim. Colgan is probably not going to get this at all, but we'll see. Probably. One second edition unnamed model got a specific name in third edition. Can you name it?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Like it was just, you know, some dude, and now it's, you know, a specific person.
No, I have no idea.
All right, Jim, what's the answer?
That would be Eric Schottmeyer, formerly known as the Strong Arm Suit.
That's correct. All right.
Strong
and
Arm Suit?
Yes, it was called the Strong Arm Suit.
And he had two different sculpts, actually.
Technically.
And most people, I think, built the standing one, but now I regret not building, you know, like the Marvel jump pose.
Oh, I did the Marvel jump pose. It was easier to paint.
I could see that.
Because I didn't have to paint like all the underbits that I couldn't reach because you couldn't see it when you're on the table.
I mean, they're both equally easy to paint for me, so it's not. All right, so my last feat of strength, continuing with minions. Can you guys name three minions with alt sculpts, excluding nightmare boxes?
Excluding nightmare boxes?
Yeah, so they have to be packaged individually.
Okay. Yes.
What about you, Colgan?
No, I don't. I don't know.
Did you not even look at the Black Friday sale page?
I didn't want to tempt myself. I have too much stuff. I have way too much stuff, man.
All right, Jim. Give me the minions, and if you can, the alt sculpt name too.
So this might be cheating. So if it is, let me know. There's technically limited edition Bayou Gremlin.
Yeah, that works.
Limited edition Swinehurst.
Mm-hmm.
And there is the Hikome.
Yep. That's three. There's a ton other. Can you name one that's in an earlier edition that doesn't have a plastic model? So a metal one that doesn't have a plastic one.
Yes. There is the female Hog Whisperer.
Mm-hmm.
There is Miss Pack the Nurse. There is the third Desperate Mercenary who goes by the name of Zephyr. If you read the lore for first edition, you can tell because it's the red haired mercenary lady.
Wait, do you mean misdemeanor?
I think so. Yeah. I think it is misdemeanor now in the app.
Yep. Yeah.
Well. And there's Ross.
Jim is clearly the strongest of all of us.
Ross Jepson. Yeah. I'm just naming all the Bayou alt models because those are the ones I really know right now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's actually, you know, there were more than I thought, you know, when I was first like trying to cobble together some feats of strength. Yeah, there's, so I'm kind of disappointed that you didn't get the stitch together, Colgan.
Oh, I guess barely, they count as a nightmare thing.
Yeah, they're barely together. They're an alt sculpt that aren't
Well, they are a nightmare.
Well, they are a nightmare, but they're not in a nightmare box, right? Because otherwise you would just name the minions that, you know, like you're like Mayfang's 1988 rail workers or whatever, so. All right, so that'll do it for my feats of strength. Do you guys have anything else you want to say on this Festivus?
Colgan, you first.
Fucking fix the Abyssinia Titan.
I wanted to take a moment to be a bit sappy and say that it is surreal that this is the third Festivus episode, and I think it is pretty awesome to see how the community has come since third edition started. We've seen some content creators go. We've seen some content creators come onto the scene, and it's heartening to see that there is still a lot of content being made about Malifaux. And despite all of our, you know, our earlier airing of grievances, the fact remains that there's a lot of love for the game. There's a lot of excitement for the game. And also, unrelated to the game, I think you two guys are really swell.
Aww.
And I'm really glad that I got the chance to meet you guys and when I was out there. So, haven't said that in a while, and I should have.
No, I appreciate it. It worked out. Obviously, it's quite unfortunate to not have you in our local meta anymore, but now we have a toehold in the Delmarva region. So
yeah,
it worked out. I think I wouldn't make a podcast about Malifaux if I wasn't really into Malifaux. I think, on the whole, Weird is doing a pretty good job. I am, every time Weird comes out with new stuff, I'm continually amazed that they managed to carve out the space for it. And yeah, I am looking forward to what comes next, particularly if what comes next addresses some of my legitimate and sadly at this point longstanding grievances. So with that, I think, I don't know if there will be another episode of The Other Coast in this year. Maybe not. So I just want to wish everyone, a happy winter holiday of choice, or, none. If you don't want any of them, that's cool too. And if we don't, if you don't hear from us again in 2022, we'll see you guys in 2023. And with that, it'll do it for me.
Bye, everyone.
Have a good night.
Night.